I'm Rick Ganley, and this is NHPR News at 9:06.
From New Hampshire Public Radio, I'm Laura Kanoy, and this is The Exchange. In mid-2013, the public school profession was rattled by a report from the National Council on Teacher Quality that took aim at how America's educators are themselves educated. The report said our country's system of teacher preparation had become an industry of mediocrity, churning out first-year teachers with skills inadequate to thrive in today's classroom. And while the report's methodology was widely criticized, many states took its basic message to heart and are now revamping what's involved in getting that teaching degree. New Hampshire is among them, looking at more rigorous standards at our teacher colleges, including the need for more in-classroom experience, with a typical student teaching stint often lasting only a semester, not nearly long enough, many say, to really get what it takes to handle, never mind educate, a room full of rowdy kids. Today in The Exchange, the second in our series on the teaching profession, this hour, grading teacher education programs, let's hear from you. What's wrong with the way our teachers are trained, and how could they be better prepared? Give us a call. The Exchange number, 1-800-892-6477, 1-800-892-NHPR. Email is exchange at nhpr.org. Post a comment on our Facebook page, NHPR Exchange, all one word. With me in studio is Judy Filian, director of the New Hampshire Department of Education's Division of Program Support, which includes the Bureau of Credentialing. Judy, good to have you. Thank you for being here.
Good morning.
Also with us, Jennifer Thompson, social studies and language arts teacher at Unity Elementary School. She teaches 6th through 8th grade. And Jennifer, good to have you. Thanks for taking time out.
Thank you very much.
Also with us, Stephanie Burke, 8th grade science teacher at West Running Brook Middle School in Derry. She was the 2013 New Hampshire recipient of the Presidential Award for Excellence in Mathematics and Science Teaching. Stephanie, thank you for coming in.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
And joining us from D.C., Stephen Sawchuk, assistant editor for Education Week, a national newspaper covering K-12 education. Stephen also writes it's Teacher Beat blog. And Stephen, good to have you. Thanks for being with us.
I'm honored to be here. Thank you.
Well, and Stephen, I want to start with you. It seems the nation has been engaged in a long debate for many years about how to make sure kids know what they need to know. What's this newer conversation, Stephen, about what teachers need to know and that maybe we're not training them the right way?
Well, you know, I'm going to back up just very briefly here and say one of the things that's happened over the last 10 years is that researchers have established through empirical methods that teachers are a very important factor in how kids do in school. You know, this, I think, is something of a no-brainer, but there have been a number of studies that really drive home this point over the last 10 years. So naturally, we have policy folks, non-governmental groups like the National Council on Teacher Quality, which you mentioned a few minutes ago, Laura, that have been really pressing on this idea of, well, if teachers matter so much, we really need to be sure that they are the best prepared that they can possibly be to do the best job they can do. So the context for this, 80% of our teachers in the United States come out of college or university-based programs. So that's where we see most of the sort of policy interest and action. And some of the things that they're looking at doing, that states are looking at doing, are trying to recruit college students who are academically the strongest into teaching programs. You mentioned a moment ago extending student teaching, and that's really the part of the preparation where you're in the classroom, usually working with an experienced teacher, learning the ropes, and trying to make that longer, trying to make it more meaningful, giving teachers better feedback as they start to manage classrooms and design lessons. There are challenges to looking at teacher preparation, and sometimes people ask me, well, you know, what sort of characterizes teacher preparation in the United States? And I was thinking about this, and it occurs to me that probably the best word to use is diffuse. Every state gets to determine its own standards for teacher preparation. They determine how long student teaching should last, the courses that teachers should take. It's very decentralized here. It's not a centralized system, and so there's many different viewpoints and variations from state to state in how we prepare teachers. So I know some of my other panelists this morning will talk about what that looks like in New Hampshire, but keep in mind that nationally we're talking about a system where there's a lot of variation from state to state and college to college.
Well, it almost sounds like one of the arguments often made, Stephen, for Common Core, that in terms of kids and how they're tested and educated, every state has such different standards. Now people are saying the same thing about teachers.
That's right. I mean, I think the United States, we forget sometimes because some of these federal policy initiatives have been in the news so much, but states really are have the primary responsibility for education, states and local school districts as well.
Stephanie, what do you think about all the attention nowadays that Stephen's telling us about on this issue of teacher preparation?
I think it's, and I've got a couple stories for you here. I myself did student teaching for about 10 to 12 week stint. I did two certifications, so I did them back to back. So it was about a half a year. My mother decided to go into the teaching profession right after me, after she saw how much fun I was having. She did a full year through UNH, and the two of us had very different experiences. And I would say I agree that you need to be out in the trenches, you need to have that experience. But what I would suggest to that is not a time length, but who you're with. I think it's so important that you have a chance to see more than one teacher in action, because we all bring so many different strengths to us, and we all teach the way we learn. And of course, as we know, everybody learns different. So everybody teaches different. And I think that's a huge part that I'd like to see teacher preparation go to, is have them have a chance, not just one specific teacher, but go out and see as many as you can, so you can learn from, you know, that huge diverse field that we have of, you know, resources out there.
Well, that's an interesting point. And in medical school, for example, you do, you know, some time with OBGYN, you do some time with surgery, you do some time with internal medicine and so forth. So it's kind of the same thing, isn't it, Stephanie?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Everybody's got a specialty. Everybody does something, you know, a little bit better, or better expertise. Somebody might be better at classroom management. Somebody might be better at hooking the children in. And you want to be able to pick those all up and maybe not just with the same person.
And real quick again to you, Stephanie, and then I want to hear from everybody else, too. Given all the attention on teacher training and some people saying, you know, culture of mediocrity and so forth, I mean, do you feel a little bit picked on there, or is this welcome attention?
I just say game on. Let me prove it to you. You know, let me prove it to you what we're doing. Come see my students, you know, see how hard they work. And I, you know, myself as well, you know, I put in the hours on the weekend and I expect as much from myself as I do as them. So I would say come into my classroom and see what's going on.
What do you think, Jennifer, this idea of lots and lots of attention these days, not just focused on what kids are learning, but teachers?
Well, I think it's appropriate. I think that we, not only as professionals, but as parents as well, of which I'm one, I think that we have every right to expect a lot of our teachers, just as we would professionals in any other career. I took a rather circuitous path to becoming a teacher. I had a previous career as managing editor in a small publishing house, and it was very demanding, and I had for a long time thought about whether I was up for the challenge of teaching. And I think it's very important for students, young and older, who are thinking about becoming a teacher, to really research ahead of time the teacher preparation program and be aware of the challenges that they're in for, because it certainly was much more challenging than I thought. And it's not for everybody. And unfortunately, there are teachers who do go into teaching and remain in teaching, but there is in some ways a culture of mediocrity. And I think that's where the United States, we really need to change the culture of
and we'll
education.
Talk, we'll talk more about details in just a minute, but I'm interested in some of the broad ideas that you have, Jennifer, about how teacher education, teacher preparation could be changed. Stephanie talked about, for example, don't just student teach with one person, student teach with a whole bunch of teachers. What other ideas do you have about how you could have been maybe better prepared for what you were going to meet in the classroom?
Well, I have to say that, first of all, I was very prepared for my first year of teaching. I attended the Upper Valley Educator Institute in Lebanon, New Hampshire. I was 35 years old, so I was ready to teach. I thought about joining the program. And UVEI involves a one-year intensive internship in the school system, where interns are teaching in a classroom with a mentor teacher for the entire year. So they're really getting a great idea of what it is like to be in the trenches. It very much differs from the 10 to 20 week practicum that many university programs have. And for that reason, I was ready and I was lucky to be hired my first fall after graduating. I ended up in a middle school classroom. And because I had had so much experience, I felt like I was ready to go.
Okay. And Judith, what do you think about this culture of mediocrity? We need to improve our teacher education programs. Again, you're at the New Hampshire Department of Education's Division of Program Support, which includes the Bureau of Credentialing. So you're credentialing these programs.
Well, our state board has taken this on. It's a high priority for them. And in the last year, we've updated our standards for the approval of teacher ed programs. As a matter of fact, we're going to pilot that process later this month. Colleges are going to be required to show evidence that they are using the data that's available to them. College students are going to have to pass rigorous admission tests in order to get into the program in numeracy and literacy skills. Colleges are going to have to provide evidence that the faculty are up to date and current. I think there are high expectations of the colleges.
So it'd be tougher to get in and tougher to get out, it sounds like.
That's correct.
It's interesting. You said the colleges, Judy. Just for my information, who's providing most of the teacher education in this state? Is it, you know, Plymouth State and Keene State? Those are our traditional providers.
Well, we have 15 institutions of higher education. UNH probably puts out the most students. Keene and Plymouth follow. And then we have several smaller programs, such as the Upper Valley program that was just described.
And Stephanie got her degree from New England College. Are there too many providers, Judy? That's been a criticism in other states.
I don't believe so. I think our biggest problem is the critical shortage areas. Last year, only one student was recommended for certification in chemistry, a critical shortage area. Now, institutions are continuing to hire teachers in those areas, but they're put on non-traditional plans while they teach. Physics is another one. There were no graduates in physics last year.
In the whole state?
In the whole state.
Wow. All right. Maybe in a minute or so I'll ask Stephanie what she thinks about that because she's an eighth grade science teacher. We welcome your questions and comments, too, in just a moment. Join us as we look at teacher education programs, how our educators in the Granite State are themselves educated, and whether these programs need to be beefed up. Join us 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange at nhpr.org. This is The Exchange on NHPR.
This is New Hampshire Public Radio, 919. Good morning. Make sure your membership gift to NHPR goes as far as it can with our corporate match program. Many businesses around the state match their employees' donations to NHPR. You can essentially double the impact of your membership gift. Find out if your company participates at nhpr.org. More on the teaching profession, educating our educators on The Exchange, and the 10 on the Diane Rehm Show, the political divides on how to best eliminate poverty. New Hampshire weather, mostly cloudy, scattered snow showers for today. High temperatures in the 20s. Support for NHPR comes from you, our listeners, and support also comes to us from the Turner Group of Concord. Architects, engineers, and building scientists designing energy-efficient, sustainable buildings for a healthy environment. Online at hlturner.com. And Birch Hill Terrace, a not-for-profit continuing care retirement community offering independent living, assisted living, and nursing care in Manchester. BirchHillTerrace.com. This is NHPR.
This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Knoy. Today in The Exchange, part two of our series on the teaching profession, how best to educate our educators. We invite you to join us at 1-800-892-6477, 1-800-892-NHPR. What's wrong with the way our teachers are trained these days in the Granite State? How could they be better prepared for the rigors of facing a classroom? 1-800-892-6477, again, is the number. Email exchange at nhpr.org. Facebook is NHPR Exchange, all one word. You can post a comment there if you like. And Stephen, back to you. This issue of in-classroom training that our guests talked about. Here we had Jennifer, who did a whole year intensive internship. Stephanie, who did a couple weeks, but her mom did a whole year. What's the national conversation, Stephen, about how long teachers need to do that classic student-teacher experience?
So I think that there is general recognition at this point that longer experiences in classroom is probably better. One of the national accreditors, accreditation for teacher education is largely voluntary in the United States, but one of the national accreditors has basically made that one of its new standards of excellence. They want to see that, that teachers have that long to do. Now, I think where it starts to get tricky is that, I mean, I really liked the idea that I think it was Stephanie mentioned of doing rounds with different teachers. Logistically, though, you have a College of Education where they have to somehow organize that with many different districts that they might be working with where they're placing these teachers. They have to go out and try to assess the quality of teachers and buildings that are there now so that they can match you with the teachers that seem to be the most effective in the classroom. You know, last week you had a series that sort of tried to get at this issue of educator effectiveness and how do we know it when we see it, and that's a very in some ways, I think that's still a conversation that people don't always agree on what the definitions are. So then we have this added problem of we want to match student teachers with teachers who are out there and are the best. I think that can be a challenge. I think also that sometimes we forget that teacher education programs aren't just technical programs. They don't just produce teachers. I mean, these are academic institutions. So we do see nationally, and I don't know if this is the case in New Hampshire, but sometimes, especially in the large state universities that produce many teachers, there's sort of a status divide between who we might think of as like tenured researchers that are really conducting research, and then the clinical professors who are the ones that are most often in contact with students in teacher preparation programs, the ones who teach methods courses. And so sort of having a really coherent approach to designing those field experiences, I think, can be a challenge because education departments are involved in so many different kinds of activities.
So it's easy to say, Stephen, yeah, teachers should have more meaningful student teaching experiences or
right.
longer ones, but when it gets down to the details, it gets a little tricky. Is that what you're saying?
I think it gets tricky. I think people are still learning the best kind of way to do this. I think we agree, right, that we want that it probably a year long isn't going to do all that much good if you're assigned to a teacher that, you know, maybe does a lot of rote learning or does worksheets. I mean, so you might be there a year. That's not necessarily going to help you get better. So finding the best teacher to be placed with is a big challenge.
Yeah, and if it doesn't fit, that's not good. It's definitely.
I mean, of the same is probably not as good as more of something better. And I think that's what when Judith was describing the programs in New Hampshire that are doing a year and the new standards that they're doing, I think that's what they're aiming for. So, I mean, as with many other things, it's the devil, I think, is in the details. But I do think that you're correct that that we think conceptually and theoretically that a year is going to be better than just 12 weeks.
Stephanie, I love your thoughts on this, too. This seems to be a key point. Do you think most classroom teachers welcome that student teacher, or do they think, oh, my gosh, this is one more thing I have to deal with in addition to, you know, 25 kids?
I think it depends on the person and where you are, of course, in your career. You know, sort of being a beginner teacher, you wouldn't obviously want to be that mentor teacher. But as you get further into the field, certainly I would welcome the chance to do that. I think, you know, going back to what I had mentioned before, if you are, you know, with a teacher for a year, you will pick up on their strengths and you will learn so much. I think what was valuable to me is that even before I got into my student teaching, I was able to do a couple weeks at a different school and different things. And you got to see a whole mirage of awesome, you know, teaching and with different strengths and weaknesses. And I think that's so important as much of the day-to-day is because you want to pick up those things that you're so great on. And, you know, where Jen might be, you know, a stronger in formative assessment than I am, you know, I would certainly like to learn from her and have the opportunity to do that.
Were there things, Jennifer, that you wished you had known when you went into that classroom? I wish I had understood that better or had a little more experience with that. Or did you walk in on day one, you know, feeling like Superwoman and you could tackle this?
Oh, absolutely not. First, I should mention that my internships were in early elementary grades. They were not in middle school, but they were in first grade and fourth grade.
Oh, wow. Big difference.
Right. Huge difference. And what I wish I was more familiar with were the New Hampshire grade level expectations, also known as the GLEs, which I unfortunately had not been exposed to prior to my internship, which made sense because my internship began right away. I also was not involved in curriculum development. And I found that when I started my first year, I felt like I was on an island of my own. I was in a very small school without other colleagues to work with, and I kind of had to figure it out on my own. But eventually that would help me out very well.
Was there something you wished, Stephanie, that you'd known that first year?
Yeah, I can absolutely think of a few things. Certainly the technology aspect. When I was in grad school, this was back in, 06, which doesn't seem that long to me, but was...
In terms of technology, it's a million years
it
ago.
It is a million years ago. We need to meet the kids where they are, and having that technology piece to come into play, it's the same as I do for my students. They can learn anything off Google, a quick fact, but I want to teach them how to think and how to have those critical thinking skills, and I think I would have preferred having more of that in relation to the technology piece when I was, of course, like I said, 10 years ago. It's a whole different ballgame than it is right now.
You know, that's a great point. And actually, Judy, real quick to you, and then we'll go to our listeners. What are teacher education programs in the state, as they revamp their standards, doing about technology? You know, Stephanie's so right. There's so much out there. The kids are using so much. Are we integrating this also into our teacher education programs?
Very definitely. In the new standards, the general education standards, the pedagogical standards, all deal with technology. We also worry about the technology level of faculty, and those are questions that we will be asking in the future. So yes, technology very definitely plays a role.
Yeah, and continuing education probably, because it keeps changing.
True.
So you may graduate in 06 like Stephanie and feel like you have a handle on it, and by 2010 you don't have a handle on it. Go ahead,
right.
Stephanie.
I just wanted to weigh in on that. And talking about technology, I've recently done what's called flipping my classroom. I don't know if you're familiar with that. Basically what it means, instead of lecturing during the day, you make a short video. The children watch it at night and they come in and apply that learning with you during class.
So you have a conversation about your lecture.
Correct. And then we apply it. So especially in science, we do a lot of labs, a lot of hands-on, a lot of inquiry. And I'm there to help you with those higher order thinking, help you with the, not just learn this fact, but I want to help you think about, what does that mean? What does that mean to you? And where technology is a huge piece of that for me, my best friend took me 2 weeks to learn how to use my iPod. Technology has been a huge thing that I have dove into headfirst. And I'm on webinars, every week. I have about 175 people from all over the world on these webinars learning. You have Twitter with, and again, this was a long process for me to learn this, but and talking to other teachers out there, what are you doing with this technology? What specific software are you using?
All right, let's go to our listeners. Again, the number 1-800-892-6477. Join us with your questions, comments, personal experiences as we look at how we teach our teachers, looking at some of the teacher education programs in the state and around the country, and a new push to make them better. 1-800-892-6477. Email is exchange at nhpr.org. Facebook is NHPR Exchange, all one word. And to West Emerson, Vermont, and Lisa's on the air. Hi, Lisa. Go ahead.
Hi, Laura. Thanks for taking my call. Well, I'm 73 now, but I look back on my experience, even though I got a master's in education, as really very, very difficult teaching music, fourth grade, second grade, and fifth and sixth combination. So I just felt very unprepared and very unsupported by principals or other teachers, and it was not a good experience, even though both my parents were teachers at Milton Academy and Milton Mass, and I thought, oh, this is going to be easy. I know how to do this.
Silly you, right, Lisa? So you felt unprepared even though you had a master's degree.
Yeah. The master's degree was talking about some theory of some guy in Europe in this 18th century, and it just didn't prepare me for what I was going to have to face in the classroom with the kids.
You know, this is a great call. Thank you, Lisa. Do teachers, Judy, need master's degrees these days, or can you get into the classroom straight out of college?
Well, you can get in the classroom with a baccalaureate degree. There are certain specialty areas like reading specialist and guidance counselor that require a master's degree.
Do you think teachers need a master's degree to be effective teachers, Judy?
I think they need the ability, the experience. I don't think a master's degree necessarily assures that.
And certain, there's the science of teaching, but there's the art of teaching, too. I want to hear from Stephen on this, but you first, Jennifer, what do you think? Do we need really a master's degree to get into that classroom and engage with kids?
I don't believe that we need a master's degree in order to begin in the classroom. However, I very firmly believe that at some point teachers should earn their master's degree, and I'll tell you why. First, we talk about the phenomenon in Finland, whereas Finland has reformed their education program over the last 20 years or so. And researchers have found that what seems to be different between Finland's educators and the United States is that before Finnish educators even reach the classroom, they have had a master's degree under their belt. And their programs are very research-driven. They have been involved in creating action research programs, which means that they have been in the classroom gathering evidence and determining what methods pedagogically are effective. Now, for teachers in the United States, it is possible to earn a master's degree through an action research-based program. In fact, I earned my master's through New England College, where Stephanie had gone, while I was at UVEI, and UVEI has their program as well. But being an educator does not end with a teacher preparation program. It is so important that teachers continue to learn and they stay abreast of current and cutting-edge teaching practices through self-study, ongoing professional development, observing other effective teachers, and trying out methods on their own, knowing what works, what doesn't work, and how to change it.
Oh, Stephen, she said the magic word, didn't she? Finland.
Finland.
Everybody Indeed. Says Finland does it so well, and we sort of have a love-hate relationship with this issue. What do you think we about do. This idea of comparing us to Finland, if you want to tackle that, and the question that our caller raises, do teachers really need master's degrees?
Well, you know, first I want to thank Lisa because I thought that she made a really I think that was just a great question. And in some ways, I think Lisa's question is maybe less about master's degrees and more about what is the appropriate balance between sort of pedagogical theory and sort of the very practical hands-on how to manage a classroom tips and tricks. You know what I mean? Like, this has been a debate in teacher education for, I mean, probably going on 50 years, right? Like, do we focus more on these sociological and cognitive science theories about how students learn and or do we focus more on you have kids climbing the walls today, here are three things you can do to manage the classroom? And I'm exaggerating a little bit, but, you know, the theory-practice divide has been going on for a long time, or the debates about what you need to have. Now, as to master's degrees, so far research in the United States doesn't seem to show that on average you're better with a master's degree, but I think some of the reason that that can be a little misleading is because, I mean, you can get a master's degree in a content area, you can get a master's degree in education leadership, you can get a master's degree in curriculum instruction. So when you start, I mean, we don't really have great information about what kinds of masters would be the most helpful for teachers. And then the Finland discussion is very interesting too, because, you know, in Finland, Jennifer was right. I mean, that to enter teaching, you have to have a master's degree. But all those people come in with a baccalaureate in a content area, and then they go on to do a very applied research sort of master's degree. And I think that is a very different kind of degree than the education masters that are typically offered in the United States. So in some ways, I think comparing apples to oranges a little bit. And I think we really do need to think about what should an advanced practitioner's degree for teachers in the United States look like.
Let's take another call. Oh, go ahead, Stephen. Yeah.
Oh, I was just going to add, sometimes the Finland thing, I think, is a tough discussion too, because especially for elementary teachers, it is harder to get into a teacher training school in Finland than it is to get into the civil service there. I mean, it is that prestigious.
So it's a whole different cultural
Culturally,
approach.
I think it's very different. Not that there aren't things that we can't learn from their approaches, but
let's get another caller in if we could. And this is Christina waiting in Concord. Hi, Christina. Thanks for hanging on. You're on the air.
Hi. Thank you for for taking my call.
Sure.
I'm not familiar with the situation in Finland, but I'd be very curious to find out how the social trends differ from the ones here, because I've watched my own three kids go through public school, and I have experience in the teaching field, and I've seen discussions and curriculum changes go back and forth over the years, and it's been very frustrating to me because there are a variety of wonderful ways to teach children. And, I mean, certainly at a college level you might need that master's. But like the other caller pointed out, she had that and wasn't prepared because her parents, she watched them. But it's a very different scene right now than it was when her parents were teaching. And I think no matter what education you have, it's almost like the more time that teachers are spent in a classroom with adults trying to learn, the less they're learning about what they really need to teach children. It doesn't take, to teach them multiplication, doesn't take fancy methods. It takes children at the table ready to learn. And
so, Christine, you're making a lot of points and some good ones, but what's the bottom line then for you? Are you saying
go ahead. Here's the bottom line. The bottom line is on a social level, their hands are tied. They're not supported administratively. I agree we should expect the world of our teachers, but parents expect it. The society expects it, but they're not given the tools. They can't set standards for their classroom because it's not politically correct, and they have no administrative support for all of the things that children come into the class, the behavior,
the things going on
in their families.
Okay. And Christine, I'm sorry to cut you off there, but we're heading into a break. So, Stephanie, I'm going to turn to you, and thank you, Christina, for the point. You know, part of being a teacher isn't the content, as you well know, Stephanie. It's just managing all the stuff those kids arrive at school with.
Oh, sure. And I think both callers brought up a good point. And I think there was a key word in there where they said they didn't feel supported. And I think that's a huge issue that you need to take on. You can have all the degrees in the world, but if you're not supported, certainly as a career changer, like Jen and myself coming in as an adult and starting back at the basics, that's a whole different ballgame. I was very well supported by my administration. They have been a champion and a cheerleader for me and somebody I felt I could go to. And even more than that, the teams that I have been on with mentor teachers have been hugely important to me. And those are the people that got me through those first few years.
Even if you graduate with the most stellar
Doesn't
of
matter.
Degrees, you need that.
Yep.
Thank you so much for the call, Christina. We'll take more of your calls, questions, comments after a short break. 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange@nhpr.org. This is The Exchange on NHPR.
This is New Hampshire Public Radio, 939. Good morning.
On the next Diane Rehm Show, the political divide over how best to reduce poverty. Then, how mobile apps are changing the future of communication. All coming up on the Diane Rehm Show.
The Diane Rehm Show this morning from 10 till noon on NHPR. New Hampshire weather, mostly cloudy, scattered snow showers today with high temperatures in the 20s. Partly to mostly cloudy tonight and cold, lows from 15 below in the North Country, ranging to around zero in southern areas of the state. Support for NHPR comes from you, our listeners, and support also comes to us from New Hampshire Magazine. This month, catering to hamburger lovers with a guide to burgers across the Granite State. New Hampshire Magazine, where New Hampshire comes to you. And from Systems and Communication Sciences Incorporated of New Ipswich. It's 9:40. This is NHPR.
This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. Tomorrow on The Exchange, new numbers and a new farm bill for Granite State farmers. Join us for that conversation tomorrow. Today in The Exchange, the best way to prepare our teachers, part two of our series on the teaching profession. Join us now with your thoughts, 1-800-892-6477. As we talk about teacher preparation programs, how could they be made better? 1-800-892-6477. Or post a comment on our Facebook page, NHPR Exchange. All one word. Joining us now from UNH is Tom Schramm. He's an associate professor of education there. He directs the Division of Educator Preparation and serves as coordinator of a consortium of all the teacher prep programs in New Hampshire. And Tom Schramm, good to have you. Thanks for your time.
Thanks for having me. I've enjoyed the conversation thus far.
Well, how has this national discussion that Stephen told us about on teacher education, whether these programs could be improved, how has that affected UNH's approach to educating teachers?
It hasn't really affected what we've been doing. Our program has been utilizing a year-long internship for approximately 50 years. We were, in fact, the first program in the country to come up with the five-year program and the year-long internship. But we are affected in the sense that we continue to get mixed messages from federal policy under both of both the current and the previous administration. Federal policy supported, you know, continues to support programs that have little or no pre-service clinical preparation requirements.
Pre-service clinical preparation means student teacher?
Student teaching.
Okay.
The federal government still doesn't push all teacher preparation providers to have that requirement, to actually be in a classroom before they start teaching in one. So we're not impacted by that, but we know that a lot of programs are. And as I believe Stephen and a couple of your other speakers mentioned, there is a lot of variation in the effectiveness of ed prep programs.
Yeah, it varies a lot state by state. As Stephen said, you know, here's an email, Tom, that came in regarding this idea of how long a student teacher should be in the classroom. Dennis says, requiring a full academic year of student teaching has its merits, but may be a barrier to those considering teaching as a second career. While it's possible to fit in ed courses around a full-time job, requiring a full year in a classroom without income is prohibitive to many who may have much to offer. It's an interesting point. Thank you, Dennis, for the email. What do you think, Tom?
That's true, but it also has to do with, I believe, what Stephen was bringing up about how you structure these year-long internships and how you set them up so they can be workable. It is, I will say, it is a significant commitment of our students to commit to the year-long internship in the five-year program. But again, it's how you structure it. We set up our structure with partnership schools in a cohort model. We don't simply send our students out isolated into schools. We have a selection process for our schools right now to ensure the quality both of the teachers and the commitment of the school overall. And because of the cohort model, we are able to get our students, even though they're in with one teacher predominantly for the entire year, because of the cohort model, they are able to move quite freely and frequently into other classrooms, observe each other teach, observe other interns and other cluster sites.
So cohort model means, Tom, you're not...
Cohort model, for example, I work with six interns right now, and they are all in the same school, and I am with that school. Often for a period of years. I just came off 10 years with one school so that I not only came to know all the teachers, but all the students in the school as well, which facilitated my ability to help my interns in the classroom.
I have a more philosophical question for you, Tom. Beyond this issue of, you know, programs and how many hours and how many months and so forth, many of us remember a teacher who shared their passion for the subject just by showing us that they cared about it and showed that they cared about us understanding. And, you know, all of us can remember, even if we didn't really care for the subject at hand, these teachers got us to care about it. They got us excited about it. Is that something that you can really teach, Tom, that sort of passion and that ability to engage with young people?
I don't think that's something you can teach in the same way that I don't think that we're in the business of training teachers, per se. We're in the business of educating teachers. And so part of that as well, in terms of some of the dispositions you're saying, that becomes part of our process for selecting who comes into the field. But then we also try to provide, through the quality of our internship placements, good models for these students as they're working in the classroom. We're looking for teachers that don't only do an excellent job in preparing their students and enhancing their learning experience, but we're also looking in our teachers for those who have certain dispositions, such as caring, ethic of care, and so on.
So that's the more selective process in terms of who even gets into the program and begins this program.
Exactly.
Tom, it's good to talk to you. Thank you very much.
All righty.
Tom Schramm, Associate Professor of Education at UNH, Director of the Division of Educator Preparation and Coordinator of a consortium of all the teacher prep programs in New Hampshire. The number for you to join us is 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange at nhpr.org. Here's an email that came in from Tana in Portsmouth. And Judy, I'm going to throw this to you. She says, I'm wondering if your guests can talk a little bit about how the teacher prep programs in New Hampshire are preparing future teachers for competency or proficiency-based teaching. Now, some people may not know what that is, but that's the idea that a student may not have may not have to sit in the chair for X amount of hours, but just has to prove that he or she understands the material. The example often given is, I spent the summer in Guatemala, and now why should I have to take Spanish when I already speak it? What about that? It's a good question that Tana asks. Future teachers, how they're being prepared for this new world of competency-based teaching.
Well, I think it's being incorporated into our programs. It certainly has been a theme of our State Board of Education, and the new minimum standards for school approval include competency-based learning. Many of the schools are, even their grading system is driven by that. And so certainly those who are in year-long internships are exposed to that, but also before that, it's in their pedagogy. I do believe it's a part of the program.
And just real quickly, you talked about the State Board of Education, and again, you're with the Department of Education. Given how locally based education is here in New Hampshire, do you guys make recommendations and we hope you'll do this, or can you say, no, School A, you must do this?
Well, in terms of the minimum standards, they must offer competency-based education, and we don't direct how they do that. That's more locally controlled. But very definitely, it's an expectation.
I wonder your thoughts, Stephen, on other states, because New Hampshire is very hands-off when it comes to the local districts.
Mm-hmm.
What about other states?
And are you speaking with respect to
teacher training, what it needs
to... the teacher colleges?
Teacher training and who's in charge of saying, you know, this is what we'd like you to do, or this is what you must do?
I think that's a very delicate dance in most states. Technically... every state approves each educator preparation program. And so it's within their purview to withdraw program approval. And then that would mean that the College of Education could no longer recommend a candidate for a license, essentially. My read on this, though, is that it happens fairly rarely. And I think in some ways that's a function of the fact that, you know, you have these standards for programs, but, you know, they can be vague or hard to measure. One of the things we talk a lot about in teacher preparation is we want candidates to, for instance, learn how to be reflective practitioners, which really means that, as they go back and analyze a lesson that they taught, figure out what worked and what didn't work. That's a really complicated skill, and I think it's very hard for state regulators essentially to go out to 15 different programs and figure out whether that program is effectively getting all their candidates to do that. I mean, that's a very conceptual thing to get new teachers to be able to do. So I think that it's difficult, and I think it's also difficult because you remember you can set standards for teacher education, but there's still academic freedom in these institutions, and you cannot require professors to have a standard syllabus or anything like that.
They need to do it the way that they think it is best to be done. That's why you hire them.
I mean, it's poking and prodding, and I think more carrots than sticks.
All right. Let's take another call. This is Concord, Vermont. Paul is on the air. Hi, Paul. Go ahead.
Hi. Good morning. I wanted to bring up a few points here. One is that we're having a conversation that's really dealing with a systemic reality, and I think that context needs to be a piece of this conversation. So when I think of a system, I think of four dimensions. I think the system impacts us on the internal dimension, it impacts us our interpersonal relationships, it impacts us institutionally, and it impacts us culturally. And so, for example, the question you just asked about teacher training and those are all institutional issues. And so that's all playing out within this conversation and to just focus it on, you know, there's all of those aspects impacting teacher training. And you mentioned a cultural piece a little while ago. You talked about Finland. We said that's a different culture, and it is. And, in fact, we have a model for that here. I haven't been in the high school classroom for a number of years, but I taught for 16 years in independent schools. And if you go to Exeter, St. Paul's, Derryfield, Proctor, Holderness, you won't find anybody there with an education degree.
Really? People don't teach
schools? No, it's not required in independent schools. But what you have is you have a lot of smart people who have degrees in the fields, in the areas that they're teaching, and then they go on and do work in that. Sometimes they go on and, you know, there's a lot of work done around pedagogy and all of that, but that's not a requirement in independent schools. And I think, you know, we often use independent schools as a model of excellent education.
Okay.
And it's the same thing when you look at states with high-stakes testing. Independent schools aren't connected with that. So I think that there's, if we think of some of the best teachers we've had, in particularly in the college level, they didn't have degrees in education.
Okay. Paul, thanks for calling. This is an interesting point. Go ahead. I wonder what you think about this, Jennifer.
I completely agree. What we haven't delved into yet, and it is so important, is culture, establishing a culture that not only develops a drive to learn in children, but also in educators as well. And the caller had mentioned independent schools and the culture of learning that they have. It's true that many of those teachers do not have degrees, but what does seem to be consistent is that there is a consistent method of support and a passion to enforce the culture in a positive way throughout the school, and that also rubs off on the students. And that is especially important in our public schools as well. And strong leadership is key in that respect.
You know, it's interesting too, and Stephanie, I'm going to throw the question to you, but in a different way. Young people often ask me, do you need a journalism degree to be a successful journalist? And with all due respect, you don't. I don't have a journalism degree. A journalism degree is great. I'm not putting it down, but you don't necessarily need one to be a successful journalist. What about teachers? Do successful teachers necessarily need a teaching degree?
For myself, I would have to say yes. My undergrad is in science. It's not in education. I never took an education course. I never saw myself as a teacher. I wanted to prepare myself and have all of that book learning on the pedagogies, understanding Vygotsky and all of the theories out there. But then I wanted to have that in my bag of tricks and then go in and apply it. So I felt like I needed to seek that out to understand what it was all about. So I would say yes, you need to have that. But especially as you get through 6th through 12th grade, you really need to have more of a subject-based education, I think, so you can draw on that as an expert in your field.
Now, I'm assuming West Running Brook Middle School in Derry is a public school, is
mm-hmm.
that right?
Yep.
What model do you think, and it's interesting to hear from our caller, that the private schools offer us in terms of teacher quality and teacher training?
I'm not sure. I haven't spent a lot of time in that. Public school, I think, offers a great deal because we have so many backgrounds that are there. And I love the diversity of both my team members and my students alike. I think they bring so much to the table. And I think that's a great, as we were talking about culture, I think you can bring culture all the way back down to your classroom. I am absolutely responsible for the culture of learning in my classroom. I am that leader, and I see myself as fostering that, and that is my number one job. If you don't feel safe to learn in my classroom, then I'm not doing my job. And I think, so if you're talking about culture, you can talk real big, or you can talk with my 30 students that I have in my class.
Here's an email from Rob that came in. This says, two concepts not yet discussed. How do we make sure that those in higher ed who teach our future teachers rigorously examine their own teaching practices? So now we're talking about really who's teaching the teachers and whether they need to be better taught. Also, Rob says, how do we ensure that such professors are part of a dynamic conversation about best practice rather than being autonomous in their own courses? Judy, to you, and then maybe Stephen as well. Thanks, Rob, for the email.
Well, in terms of the autonomy in the classroom.
This is at the college level now.
At the college level. What we're going to be doing here in New Hampshire is really looking at the faculty and looking at whether or not they're current and whether or not they're out in the classroom themselves. This is the first time we've done that.
That's interesting. So, and sorry to interrupt you. So you're going to be looking at not just the teachers, you know, the Stephanies and the Jennifers, but the professors that are teaching them and seeing if those folks are also having some experience in the classroom, at least knowing what it's all about these days.
Absolutely. And in terms of autonomy, we're very definitely going to be looking at outcomes. So they're going to have to look at the data of how well their students are doing, not only in their collegiate program, but afterward.
All right. Well, Rob, thank you for the email. Interesting point. And Stephen, to you, just to finish up, what's the one big change that you think we are going to see over the next couple of years when it comes to better teacher preparation, better teacher education?
Boy, that's tough. My crystal ball is broken. I think it's hard to say. I think it's hard to say that there's going to be any one thing that everyone agrees on, because a lot of these things are contested, frankly. I think that I want to reiterate, I mean, I think what Judith just said is very heartening, because one thing that we do have to sort of get a grip on with higher ed is that the rewards in higher ed are really for autonomous work, like Rob was saying. I mean, you publish and then you receive tenure. But what we need from educator preparations programs are very coherent programs where you don't have a lot of professors going in lots of different directions with what they're teaching new teachers, but there's a really well-thought-out, well-designed program. I mean, back to this, I think, theme of coherence also that we heard from Tom in the way the field experiences are designed. So I think hopefully with regulations such as the new ones in New Hampshire and in other states, we'll see faculty meeting more often and really trying to think about what are the things that we have to make sure that every candidate comes out knowing.
All right. Stephen, thank you very much for giving us your time this morning. We appreciate it.
Thank you.
Stephen Sawchuk, assistant editor for Education Week, a national newspaper covering K-12. He also writes its Teacher Beat blog. And Judy Filian, good to have you. Thank you for being here.
Thank you.
Judy Filian, director of the New Hampshire Department of Education's Division of Program. Jennifer Thompson, good to meet you. Thank you for making some time out.
Thank you for having me.
Jennifer Thompson, social studies and language arts teacher at Unity Elementary School. And Stephanie Burke, thank you also for your time.
Great. Thanks for having me.
Stephanie Burke, eighth grade science teacher at West Running Brook Middle School in Derry. The Exchange is a production of New Hampshire Public Radio. The engineer is Dan Colgan. Our producers are Ellen Grimm and Faith Meixel. Our volunteer is Alan Cohen. Our intern is James Pouliot. Our theme music was composed by Bob Lord. The Exchange's executive producer is Keith Shields, and I'm Laura Kanoy.
The views expressed in this program are those of the individuals and not those of NHPR, its Board of Trustees, or its underwriters. If you missed any part of today's program, listen to The Exchange anytime at nhpr.org.
I'm Laura Kanoy, and tomorrow on The Exchange, the state of New Hampshire farming. A new survey shows the number of farms in the Granite State is on the rise, bucking national trends, although our farms themselves are getting smaller. Meanwhile, a new U.S. farm bill presents opportunities and concerns for New Hampshire agriculture. We'll dig into the latest with Granite State farmers. Send us your thoughts by email or Facebook, and join us for The Exchange tomorrow morning live at 9 and again at 8 p.m. on NHPR.
Diane Rehm Show next at 10 o'clock on New Hampshire Public Radio, where support comes from you, our listeners, and from Dartmouth Hitchcock, primary care doctors and nurses who put you at the center of health, 13 locations statewide, information at the-hdocs.org. And Ellen's Interiors, New London and Cambridge, Massachusetts, dressing your windows with an array of beautiful and energy-efficient Hunter Douglas window fashions, ellensinteriors.com.
These are the stations of New Hampshire Public Radio.
WEVO, Concord, 89.1.
WEVS, Nashua,
88.3. WEVH, Hanover, 91.3.
WEVN, Keene, 90.7.
WEVC, Gorham, 107.1.
WEVJ, Jackson,
99.5. WEVF, Colebrook, 90.3.
And WEVQ, Littleton, 91.9.
And online at nhpr.org.
It's 10 o'clock.
From WAMU and NPR in Washington, I'm Tom Gelton of NPR, sitting in for Diane Rehm. Leaders of both parties say they want to help the nation's poor, but they disagree on what works and what should be done. President Obama's new $39 billion budget for 2015 would fund job training and early childhood education and raise the minimum wage. The idea